Hey, finance folk. Welcome to the EU Finance Podcast. My name is Leithis Polubinskas, and I'm your host. In a previous episode, we talked about banking crisis management and deposit insurance. The subject of banking union, bank resolution, and related matters is so big that I thought we need to keep going with the subject. The second pillar of the EU's banking union is the Single Resolution Mechanism, which is made up of the Single Resolution Board and the National Resolution Authorities in Eurozone countries and Bulgaria. I've asked Dominique Labourex, the chair of the Single Resolution Board, the SRB, to join me today for a deeper dive into the SRB, what it does, and why it does. Mr. Labourex isn't just the chair of the SRB, he is one of the founding members. So I can't imagine a better interlocutor to help me wrap my head around this subject. There's more on the SRB in our EU Finance newsletter. You'll find a link to that in the show notes. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Labourex.
Thank you to inviting me for this podcast.
Okay, let's start from a very basic question. As I mentioned, this is sort of a second in a series of podcasts because we spoke about bank resolution and deposit insurance in a previous episode. And I asked the first question I asked of my interlocutor then is the same one I'm going to ask you, and let's see if we get a different answer. What is the banking union?
Well, that's a good question. So the banking union is one of the answers coming from the great financial crisis from 2008. At that moment, the European bodies looked at the situation and considered that among the reasons of the failure of the banks at that time, there was certainly not enough centralization of supervision and perhaps not enough regulation on some topics. And so the answers provided by the EU regulators at that time, that's to say in 14 and 15, was at the same time to revisit completely the framework for regulating banks, so with increased requirements in terms of solvency ratios, liquidity ratios, etc., also coming from international discussions, but also to implement another way of supervising banks with two pillars. One of them was the supervisory one, so the SSM, the Single Supervisory Mechanism, centralizing at the ECB, the powers for supervising big banks and creating another side function for less significant institutions, as we say in our jargon, and in parallel, creating a system for resolving banks. So again, a regulatory framework applicable to all the European Union members, plus a dedicated organization for implementing this resolution framework. And this is the second pillar of the banking union, the Single Resolution Mechanism, which is made like the SSM of a center, the Single Resolution Board, I'm honored to chair, and a periphery made of the national resolution authorities from the 21 members of the banking union. So what is the banking union? Well, the banking union is a mechanism based on two pillars, one for supervision, one for resolution, tackling the banking sector and made of two central bodies, the ECB, the Single Resolution Board, and 21 participants for supervision and 20 other ones for resolution.
Got it. Okay. So let's dive more into this whole resolution thing, because it's on the tin, as it were. It's on the name of the institution. So what is bank resolution and what are the objectives of bank resolution?
So bank resolution is something completely new in Europe. Let me start by this one. While it's a very old story in the United States, for instance, because the resolution authority created in the United States was created during the, one century ago, in 1933 in reality. So the idea is to organize an orderly disappearance of the failing banks instead of letting them go to the normal process for any corporate which is failing, that's to say a normal insolvency procedure or an or a liquidation process. So instead of a liquidation process or so insolvency procedure for a bank, which is extremely detrimental to financial stability because it's about you, me, opening an account and not being able to continue my operations on a daily basis. I cannot access ATMs anymore. I cannot go to my branch to discuss my loan, my mortgage, whatever. I cannot close my account. I need to wait for the liquidation process. It was decided to create a sort of parallel system for some banks for which there's an interest in preserving financial stability. So this is the goal number one of resolution, finding a solution for tackling the crises of banks without going necessarily to liquidation or insolvency procedures, which can be disrupted. The second goal, which is exactly linked to the great financial crisis aftermath, is that in this aftermath, the reality is that the banking system was saved with public money, with your money, taxpayers' money, my money, and this was embedded in our income taxes and other taxes. So the Europeans decided that it should not be the case anymore. And with that, in building the resolution system, the idea is to ask the shareholders and other creditors of the bank itself to pay for its failure. At the end of the day, instead of asking public money to be used to save the famous financial stability and what we call the key critical functions of the bank, which are necessary for our societies, instead of building this on public money, why not asking the bank to build itself with its shareholders and creditors sufficient buffers to first withstand the shocks coming, two, if it's not enough, to find sufficient resources to build the resolution decision. The resolution decision will be about keeping these key functions to preserve financial stability, and beyond that, I think it's much more important, to preserve confidence in the banking system by customers who are also you, me, citizens of Europe.
Okay. That sounds like it makes a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, if people are afraid of losing their money, there's going to be bank runs, and one bank run usually leads to another, contagion, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, good. Got it. I think we all understand how bankruptcy or insolvency works for like companies, right? I think less of us understand how a bank would be resolved. What sort of tools are used to resolve a bank? What are the strategies involved?
So here we go to the specificities of the banking activities. You're right. It's not exactly a normal corporate firm failing like another one and going under liquidation process. We all know when we have a next door a corporate firm closing its doors. It's not exactly the same thing because indeed banks, even if they are private corporate firms, are dealing with financial stability issues by financing the economy, by developing the transmission of money saved by customers to the ones who need this money for developing themselves, corporate firms, but also for building the mortgage loans, etc. So how can we implement something which is different from the liquidation process? The liquidation process, in a nutshell, I take the failing institution and I sell whatever I can to repay the creditors and, if possible, the shareholders at the end. So in a resolution system, we'll implement different tools based on strategies, as you said. So the ultimate strategy is indeed to preserve what we call the critical functions and to limit the impact on, again, financial stability, taxpayers' money, etc. So to do that, we have essentially two key tools. One is called the bail-in tool, and I've already mentioned it in saying the idea is to ask, and we have a power to do it compulsorily, to ask the shareholders and creditors to pay for organizing the maintenance of these critical functions. So we'll say to the shareholders and creditors, sorry, but the bank is making losses. I need a part or in full your shares or your bonds or your instruments, and I will absorb the losses with these instruments, and I will reconstitute a solvent and liquid bank with this money. So this is so we change the managers, and indeed we change the shareholders, because the shareholders are wiped out, generally speaking, due to the amount of losses. If the bank is failing, it's because, normally speaking, there are losses. There are some cases for which it's more complex than that, but let's concentrate on the classical case. And then, yes, the shareholders will be replaced by other shareholders coming from the creditors themselves, because we give them a sort of new shareholding capacity. So with that, we have a second family, which is different, and which is the one which was used in the recent cases we've managed. It's to sell the bank itself or its assets and liabilities without selling the brand and to somebody else at a price which is defined via an auction process under the resolution weekend, as we call it. So in that case, we analyze the market, we analyze the value, the remaining intrinsic value of the failing bank, and we implement the decision to sell it. If we're not able to sell it immediately, we use what we call a bridge bank. So we put a part of the assets and liabilities in a bridge bank, and we sell the bridge bank later, while the rest of the assets and liabilities are going to, their end. And with that, we can preserve what is worthwhile in terms of preservation, again, of financial stability, critical functions. We'll take all these decisions without €1 of public money. So to give you, and to finish, I can give you the one example. I will take the one in 2017, Banco Popular, which was a Spanish group failing in Spain, but also with a subsidiary in Portugal, and other subsidiaries in Spain. It was a complex group. So the size of this group was an enormous one. It was €160 billion of total balance sheet. So something which is to some extent comparable to the SVB and other American groups which failed at the beginning of this year. And so we sold it for €1 to Banco Santander after an absorption of losses of €3.5 billion. And this absorption of losses was paid by the shareholders and some creditors. And so with that, we defined a new shareholder, Santander, and Santander was able to continue the business of this bank. So comparing with liquidation, obviously there's a strong difference, continuity of the activities, because it was sold to somebody else instead of liquidation, with the bank closing its doors, waiting for the liquidation process.
So the customers, like people like me, just a normal depositor, had no pause in access to money, access to the tellers, to the managers, to whoever is going to give me banking advice, right?
Exactly. So we in that case, we decided on a Tuesday night, and on the Wednesday morning, the customers could go to their branch or to their ATM or whatever, and continue their activity without any disruption.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think you already answered my next two questions, but I'm going to go back and make sure that I understand. So the role of the Single Resolution Board is to manage the resolution of a bank that's in trouble, right?
Yes, not only. I would say that the role of the Single Resolution Board is essentially to prepare the banks for their failure, because it's extremely difficult to implement our measures without some elements of preparation. We need to access it immediately, because generally speaking, when a bank fails, it's under an enormous pressure, a time pressure, to avoid the bank run you've mentioned. We need to step in quickly and to find exactly what we need, in particular data accounting data, valuation data, the quality of assets, the list of shares and bonds, and et cetera, et cetera. We need plenty of elements. So a great part of our job is not to manage crises. We've decided only two times for resolution decisions. I mean, Banco Popular in 2017 and Sberbank in 2022. So the crisis decisions are not so numerous. So what are we doing the rest of the year, if I may say so? We are building what we call resolvability. That's to say, to be ready on both sides, the banks and ourselves, to step in if there's a need to step in. So it's a lot of work to build this resolvability. We ask banks to be ready to build the buffers we need to find, to build the IT systems, to build the valuation capabilities from a resolution perspective. They have valuation capabilities, but we need them from a resolution perspective, which is a little bit different. And on our side, we need to be ready, I've mentioned, to implement the bail-in decision, to build a bridge bank. This cannot be done last minute. It should be prepared step by step. So we are preparing ourselves all along the year, and we organize tests, dry runs, exercises to be sure that it works.
So it's like firemen. Firemen are training constantly, you know, climbing those big towers and using their ladders and making sure that they're really good at putting out fires. Hopefully they don't need to put out the fires, but they're always ready for it.
Absolutely. I think you mentioned something which is really important in ours. I don't know if the firemen are doing the same, but the more we are ready, in reality, the more remote the crisis is. Because the more we are ready in the banking side, the more buffers we can find, the more agility and nimbleness we can find. And in that case, banks are more able to withstand shocks. And I think we've seen, beginning of this year, with this crisis which stopped at the border of the European Union, banking union, the US banks, the Credit Suisse, and then it stopped. We have seen that the efforts we've put in building this new framework, as I mentioned at the very beginning, in supervision and in resolution, made in that case the banking crisis more remote than before. So the more we build the steps for resilience, the more resilience we have at the end of the day. That doesn't mean that we need to consider that it's a deal down and there will be never, ever any crisis. To the contrary, because as you said, like firemen, we need to think in terms of new sources of risks, new possibilities, new threats, and to test our ability to manage them.
I understand that you've been the chair of the SRB for just about a year. You're coming up to the end of your first year as chair. How's it going? I mean, how are you enjoying the job? What's happened? I mean, you mentioned a couple of things already, but in a nutshell, how has your year been?
Well, for me, it's on a personal basis. I'm as enthusiastic as during my first days. I'm deeply committed to improve our preparedness. And it's at the same time a challenging job because I need to build the single resolution mechanism, not only managing the single resolution board, but also all the relationships with the national resolution authorities, the third country authorities, etc. And so that means that it's a permanently challenging environment with new risks. We've seen these extremely fast crises coming from the US and Switzerland. So we need to be up and running all the time. And for me, it's a daily challenge I like in reality. So on a personal basis, it's for me a full rewarding job. What I've launched is a strategic revision. That's to say, we started this single resolution board from scratch. There was nothing before 2015. So we started from zero staff members, zero IT system, zero procedure, and we built progressively during the first years. So after, when I arrived, that means after the first 8 years, it was the good moment to reshuffle our strategy. So now, indeed, we are more or less 450-ish staff members. So we've become something significant, and it was the right moment to launch a new strategy. What the goal to achieve is in the five coming years beyond, obviously, answering our mission, which is about, again, preserving financial stability and the public purse. But beyond that, how to put flesh on these bones. And so this is exactly what we have worked on with the staff members themselves, with the National Resolution Authorities, also consulting the industry. And we are in finalizing the adoption of this strategy, which will be done in January next year, to launch the new elements for the five coming years. The new elements are essentially, as I already said, shifting from building the resolution plan strategy to being able to implement them in real life. So shifting from planning to testing to organizing these stress tests, dry runs, etc., to be sure that it can work, and to ask, obviously, the banks to be also ready facing the results of these tests. So something much more operational compared to the first years where we had to build the house from scratch.
Yeah, so you've, as a founding member of the SRB, you've been there from the beginning, building, making it better, and hopefully making it perfect someday. What did you do before that, before the SRB?
Well, so I'm coming from the French Central Bank, so I'm a central banker, if you wish. So I've taken several positions in my central bank, but I have a, let's say, a tainted profile of supervision because I've been for a long, long time a supervisor, and just before joining the SRB as chair of this authority, I was Secretary General of the French Prudential Authority, in charge of supervising banks and insurance undertakings. So my profile is a long-term one as a central banker, supervisor of banks, and also a little bit insurance undertakings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads perfectly to my last question, which is probably not for the common audience, but rather more for the stakeholders, the people in the member states who are involved in this as well. How do you think the SRB could cooperate even more effectively with national resolution authorities?
That's definitely a crucial question, because in our extremely technical work, something which is for sure is that even if we decide in Brussels, the implementation of the decisions have to be made locally, because we are speaking of local banks. A bank in Slovakia, a bank in Portugal, a bank in Finland, but not in Brussels. So whatever we decide in Brussels, the implementation phase is for the National Resolution Authority. So from that perspective, the quality and the depth of the relationships with the National Resolution Authority is for me absolutely key. And so that's why within this strategic revision, we are working on reinforcing our relationships via different elements. So some of them are extremely concrete. We want more participation of the National Resolution Authorities in building our, let's say, internal policies and developing our different tools. And then we want also to reinforce our cooperation on exchanging staff. So receiving staff from the National Resolution Authorities, sending people from the Single Resolution Board to these national authorities. We want to develop a much more deepen a common culture with the organization of some common events, for instance, with the participation of both sides. We want to pay more visits to the national resolution authorities, showing also to the national banking system that there is a lot of coordination between, let's say, again, the center and the members of this famous banking union second pillar called the Single Resolution Mechanism. So a lot of initiatives which were more or less already in place, but which will be reinforced definitely with really new things, like, for instance, in the coming years, the staff swaps, which is exactly a perfect example for building something better together.
Mr. Labourex, thank you so much for coming to the podcast and enlightening me about the SRB. I certainly have learned a lot today, and it was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you again for inviting me. Thank you very much.
Okay, here's my takeaway on this. The Single Resolution Board, the SRB, is the central resolution authority within the banking union, which at present is 20 Eurozone countries and Bulgaria. Together with the national resolution authorities, it forms the Single Resolution Mechanism. The SRB works closely with the European Commission, the European Central Bank, the European Banking Authority, and national authorities. Its mission is to ensure an orderly resolution of failing banks and to protect the taxpayer from state bailouts. That's right, to protect all of us. All this is about promoting financial stability. In a nutshell, the Single Resolution Board will be able to act swiftly, appropriately, and proportionately to establish recovery and resolution arrangements for Eurozone banks if they get into trouble. The aim is to avoid future bailouts and place the burden of resolution on the banks with minimum costs to taxpayers and the real economy. Sounds good to me. That's all for today. Thank you for joining me. Do please spread the word about the EU Finance Podcast. Like and subscribe. Until next time, bye.